Enter, if you dare.
Once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you, sir?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
Doing better. I'm recovering from a major cold that I had.
COVID.
That's what all the symptoms are the same, so you never know. But we'll figure out.
Well, have you lost your sense of taste or your sense of smell?
He never had a sense of taste.
Oh,
oh dude.
Well, that's the thing is like when your new nose is clogged up, you can't smell or taste anything anyway, so it doesn't mean anything, you know. Because people were asking me that, I go, dude, if you got a cold, you can't taste or smell anything anyway except salt, you know, and that's about it. It's like.
Well, good thing I like pretzels then.
Yes, yes, you can still taste the pretzels. That's right. And in the state of in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Hi, everyone, it's Abe here.
Abe, how's it going? You got to get a little closer.
I'm as close as I can be.
You can be closer if you can still move your mouth.
Yes, but I am actually right. How about now? Now?
That's about as good as it's going to get. Good. Don't worry about it.
How about now?
Yeah. And, yep, you're good. Connecticut American?
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how's it going?
It's really going great. Thanks.
Excellent. Very good, very good. For new listeners, who we are, Dark Discussions is a podcast that talks about horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, grindhouse, art house, midnight movies, cult films, and so forth. And we basically try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. We do have an email, darkdiscussions@aol.com, where you can email us anything and everything, and we will read your email on the podcast. We also have a Facebook group, Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, so join there and you can join into the conversation. We do have Twitter, Dark Discussion 1. And Eric, we have a website?
We do. You can find the website at darkdiscussions.com. On the front page, on the right-hand side, you'll find links to Friends of the Pod, so you can check those out. Up at the top of the page, you'll find a link to the articles section, where there are articles written by myself as well as other people. And you'll also find an audio section. In the audio section, you'll find every episode of Dark Discussions, as well as any of the spinoff podcasts that have been recorded and released, available to download for free. So check that out. You're bound to find something you like there. So on the front page, front and center is a link to our Patreon account. If you would like to help financially support the podcast, which we would really appreciate, you can find the link there, or you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. For every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly do a show on. We take all the submissions from our patrons, and you all right there?
Oh, he threw me. Oh, I thought it was on mute. Sorry.
No. We take all the submissions given to us by our patrons, and we draw one at random on a quarterly basis.
We like to draw and quarter our patrons. So,
as Phil lies dying on the other end of the microphone.
If you would like to do that, you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com.
Excellent, excellent. Yes, I survived that coughing fit. I am quarantining myself in the basement. Any help would be greatly appreciated. We don't request it, but it would be greatly appreciated. We did have another $100 bill today to convert the website into HTTPS. So we have to purchase the SSL.
The technical term is...
For the SOP. What is it?
The technical term is HTTPS.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So we needed the SSL for the SOE.
So that we're not SOL.
Right. There you go. All the acronyms. Right.
So anything would is greatly appreciated if you can help. Even if it's only one time a donation, it's all good. It is greatly appreciated. All right, so that's pretty much it. If we have any news or what we've been watching, we can do all that at the end of the episode. And today is August 13th, 2020. For folks who are interested, specifically Pam, one of our listeners. All right, so
She's such a bitch.
Ooh, that's a tough one. All right, so with all that stated, Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Sorry, I'm trying to recover from Mike's comment. All right, tonight we're going to be talking about a 2020 movie called Skyman.
State your name for camera, please.
My name is Carl Merriweather, and this is my sister Gina Campbell. Her last name is Campbell because she was married, but then she got divorced.
Okay.
And her husband's name was Carl too.
Carl, that's enough. That's too much information.
Sorry.
So, Carl, can you tell us how you became interested in UFOs?
To state it as clearly as I can, I was visited by one when I was a kid.
The skies above Apple Valley were filled with more than just clouds last night. News 6 lines were lighting up with reports of an alleged triangle-shaped UFO in the...
Some local residents claim to have seen an unidentified flying object just after sunset last evening, with one young man even claiming to have been visited by what he describes as... a Skyman.
He was tall and skinny. He didn't look human. I knew he wasn't a human. He said that he was looking for someone like me.
He has been so razor sharp focused. More than I've ever seen him. I guess I just figured he was finally, like, ready to tell a story.
Here's the HGH.
I'm telling you, it was really, really loud. I was standing right here, and it was like, zzz. Are you too sure it was not you?
It couldn't have been. We were way over the hill by the beacon.
What is it?
It's our magnet, or what's left of it. It was propelled somehow.
Okay, so what? You really think that aliens did that?
I don't know what to think, Gina. All I know is something's going on, and I don't think it's human related.
Arthur C. Clarke once said, a sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And I've always liked magic.
That's right. Skyman is written and directed by half of the team of the original Blair Witch co-writers, co-directors. This is one's by Daniel Merrick. Daniel Merrick's done a handful of films over the years, including one that was really, really good called The Believers that everybody should check out. This one here is a found footage type film. It is basically, I believe, the first major starring role in a motion picture for someone named Michael Selle, who plays the lead called Carl Merriweather. There's a couple other folks in the film that have some importance, and that would be I'm trying to find them here, but Nicolette Sweeney plays the character's sister, Gina Campbell, and then he has a good friend. in the film. And I'm trying to find that actor's name. Here he is. Faliolo Aleilima, who plays Marcus Florio, his friend. Yeah, that was a tough one to say, but that was a Samoan name. That was a Samoan name, so it was a tough one to say. But hopefully I got that one right. The film is brand new, 2020. It just came out about 2 to 3 weeks ago. Getting decent reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, about 63%, and it's been reviewed by some major publications such as the New York Times, Hollywood Reporter, and so on. So I guess we can go around and discuss how we heard about this movie by an ex-Blair Witcher, and we'll start with you, Eric.
Well, I heard about this because last week Phil was all hot to trot about doing this. And
the Grays!
Right, that's pretty much what it came down to. And the rest of us acquiesced and agreed to do the movie. I regret that choice. I was not entertained by this movie for 1 minute. I think Phil's a bad person for making us watch it. I seriously fell asleep twice while trying to get through this. Did not enjoy this movie at all. Worst movie of the year. And that's pretty much all I have to say.
All right, very good. Let's go with you, Chrissy.
Well, it's so funny because I had totally the opposite reaction of Eric. Although, Eric, I do identify with you when you say, I hate Phil for making me watch this movie, because there's plenty of shit that Phil has made me watch that I was not thrilled with either. Although most of the time, Phil does hit it right for me. And I really, in contrast, did like this movie. I'm not going to say that this was the greatest movie I've ever seen. What I will say is that it personally rang all my bells, because I think there's been a couple of other films this year like this for me too. It just had everything I liked about various different genres and subgenres, and just kind of put them all together in one movie. I love found footage. I love documentaries, whether they're, you know, fake or real, especially these ones that are done in this sort of cinema veritas style, where, you know, you're following somebody's life type of thing. I really enjoy The Grays. I like that there's not a whole lot of scary, that it's more creepy. I like that there's this whole undercurrent of madness going through the whole thing, which is also something in a lot of movies that I enjoy. I felt that the characters in this were very genuine and very real. I do have something to say about why I think that later. There's a lot of doubt about this guy's sanity. You get a really clear picture of him and who he is. I honestly thought that the acting in this was fantastic, because I completely bought that I was watching real people. Like, I never at any point thought, oh my God, this is a movie. Like, I was really buying this as almost real, and that's hard to get me to do. As far as found footage goes, I think definitely then it's some of the best acting I've ever seen. I watch a lot of found footage, like a lot of it. I watch stuff I would never admit to watching because it's so bad. Let alone recommend it to any of our listeners. But I thought this was, of this genre, really pretty good. And that's kind of my thoughts on it.
All right, very good. Yeah, for me, I heard about this film because it just popped up as a new genre film that was coming out. The director, obviously, gave me interest because not just because of The Blair Witch, but as I mentioned, The Believers, which was a really great film a decade now, which I thought was going to be his breakout. But he's pretty much remained in indie films since then. But either way, he's always a director that I'm curious to check out. The poster is pretty cool because it has a gray, and the only thing that excites me more than The Grays is maybe girls in bikinis. So,
Grays in bikinis, or Gray Taylor Swift in bikinis.
Well, you know. So either way, I was curious when I was watching the film, because it actually is more of a character study on a number of things, including how things that happen to us as a child can haunt us for the rest of our lives, to whether a person is mentally ill or not, or maybe they're completely sane and it's everybody else who's doubting that has the issues and not the person who appears to be the one that has the issue. The movie is really great when it talks about these things, specifically the psyche of people and what things can do to them positively or negatively because of what happened. Now, as a result, if you're going into this film thinking it was going to be a straight horror or science fiction found footage, like, for example, Alien Abduction, which is a film that we did a few years ago, which was more like a straight horror, a gray film. This one won't be that. This is probably one reason why Eric may have disliked it, because, again, it was more of a character study rather than anything else. For me, again, we all went into this blind, because a lot of the films that I suggest that people hate, it's films that I haven't even seen either. I just heard that they were good from somebody or a review or whatever. So, this is definitely for a select group of people, this film. But if you do like The Grays and quiet character studies, this film could work for you.
There's not actually any Grays in this movie.
Spoiler warning.
Spoiler warning, yes, but yeah.
So for me, I like the film a lot, because I do like character dramas and whatnot, and I do like how those who are doubted turn out to be possibly correct. I would give it a thumbs up, and pretty much everything Chrissy said is right on. I'm 100% backing Chrissy on everything she said. Let's go with Abe.
So I heard about this film, and because that's what we selected, that was what we settled on the chat, and I watched it today, just to keep it fresh in my mind, as I always do, and I'm very mixed. On one hand, I do agree with Phil on the character study angle. I thought that was really well done. I thought the character, Carl Merriweather, was really sympathetic and someone you can kind of connect with and understand. There's some interesting things about, you know, people trying to find validation and pursue things that, you know, even if it takes on a life because it means so much to them. On the other hand, it is a very uneventful movie. If you're looking for a film that's more exciting or something that's going to, you know, scare you or whatever, you're not going to find it here whatsoever, not one little bit. This is a very slow burn movie. It's only 90 minutes or so, but it really could feel like it's much longer because it's mostly just characters interacting with each other. And if that's what you like, you'll find plenty of it if you're looking for a character study or some human drama. But if you're looking for a more alien-centric film in terms of like actually seeing or experiencing some supernatural science fiction kind of things, you're going to find very little to almost none of it in this. And on one hand, it kind of disappointed me, but on the other hand, I felt like the aliens and everything else was more of a backdrop to do for this character study. So I'm very up and down the film. I'm sort of between where Phil and Chrissy are and Eric are, and between Eric and Phil and Chrissy. But it's not a bad film. It's actually well shot. I thought the performances were pretty good. It's just a film that's going to have a very niche sort of audience who are looking for a certain kind of film to watch. I wouldn't really recommend to just anybody. I would say if you're specifically seeking what this film has to offer, you're going to like it. If not, you might find it interesting, or you might be bored to tears. So, you know, we'll get into everything else from there, but overall my experience was in the middle.
All right, very good. And Mike?
Well, if Abe is between Phil and Christy on one hand and Eric on the other, I'm going to say I'm right in the middle of Abe. I agree very much with what Abe just said. I think much of your enjoyment of the film is going to come down to why are you watching it? Are you watching it because you're expecting to see
the Greys?
The Greys. Are you expected to see a scary film? Are you expected to see something like, say, Blair Witch? Or are you expecting to see, and when we say found footage, this is a really, within the found footage umbrella, this is a faux documentary, right?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, because this is something that's been edited and whatnot. So it's a faux documentary, or you're interested in watching a faux documentary about somebody who claims to have been abducted by an alien. Because if you're interested in the latter, you'll probably be more open to this film. If you're interested in the former, if you're interested in a scary movie, that this is not going to be it. I think what's there is good for what it is, which is the faux documentary. I do kind of get stuck with what's the point of making a fake documentary that doesn't really go anywhere when you could do a real documentary about real people that have had or claim to have had this experience. And the main thing is sort of like you could do any story about ghosts in the woods, right? But you need to have legitimate weird shit going on to do the Blair Witch Project. Otherwise, it's just kids wandering around in the woods. And here, there really isn't much legitimately weird stuff that's going on.
The owls.
Until you kind of sort of get to the end, but the end doesn't give you any goods whatsoever. And they also tell you where it's going. And so this is sort of like, you know, you can have a story about a man who goes to the store to buy some milk, and he goes to the store, he gets to the store, he buys the milk, and then he goes home. It's a story. It's a really shitty story, but it is a story. You know, you expect something to happen, and when you start with a story about someone telling you a thing is going to happen, and then that happens, pretty much exactly as it's been laid out the whole rest of the way, from the storytelling perspective, I've found that unsatisfying. So, but that's something that happens if it's a work of fiction, which of course is what this is, but it's a work of fiction pretending to not be fiction. So it's just sort of this weird thing. I think if this was as a thing that's pretending to tell a person's story, I like the way it does tell his story, and I do like the characters. I like his chemistry with Marcus. I like Marcus as a character. I like the sister as a character. There's all sorts of things. I think they draw this very well and do it very convincingly. And I really, at the beginning, I wasn't entirely sure if Phil had fucked up and actually given us a documentary about someone who was claiming to have been abducted by an alien.
Eric said the same thing.
So, you know, I had to double check and make sure that this was, in fact, a fake.
Well, not a real and to that point, Mike, on Apple's store, it's actually labeled as a documentary, which is why I was like, what?
Oh, Jesus. So, look, I wish this is a problem sometimes with films. It would be nice if filmmakers at some point would start, I don't know, maybe making some promotional material that could possibly inform people what to expect when you see a movie. But apparently that's none of that stuff out there to let you know what you're in for to watch before you actually watch the film itself, maybe to advertise it to make sure it goes to the right audience. So I think it really depends on what the audience is. So while I like the film, someone who probably was looking more for the thriller aspect. It's more like something, say, like Dark Skies. But for what's there being what it wants to be, I think it's okay. I think it's well-crafted as a fake documentary. I think it flubs the end because it doesn't do anything that you haven't been told it's going to do at the end. I didn't get a real emotional gut punch or anything that happened or catharsis through the ending. I didn't really feel that sort of thing for the character. And Phil, it's nice to have a story where, you know, the person that everyone doubts turns out to, you know, maybe the problems with the other people. Well, you know, it's the old saw of, you know, they all laughed at Einstein and he turned out to be right. It's like, yes, because he was fucking Einstein. Most people who have crazy ideas end up just having crazy ideas that don't ever pan out to anything. And, you know, we're still waiting for that person who's been abducted by aliens to come up with the goods. So I don't know. I said, I'm very mixed on this, and it really will depend on what you want. And that's all I really have to say.
All right. Very good. That's a fair point, Mike. I guess what I meant was, if you're the only person that knows and no one believes you, it's kind of good to be vindicated in the end, and whether it's this or anything. So obviously, whether it's ghosts or aliens, whatever. I didn't mean it specifically related to that. I just meant.
Oh, I know, but I'm just, there's all sorts of things that goes to, you know, being from a science background, you see it with a lot of people who make absurd claims and discoveries, and people are skeptical, and God knows we see it now. And the Russians have a vaccine for COVID. Okay, let's wait. Let's wait and see what happens. You know, and to flip it around, you know, you also get that with the Me Too movement. And, you know, the question is, you know, when is it believing women? And, well, when do you and when do you not? There's all sorts of issues about that. And if this was being done as some sort of a metaphor,
maybe
that would be one thing, but I didn't really get much of a metaphor thing. I just kind of got that this was a person who is trying to tell a story about a person who claimed to be abducted by aliens.
All right, fair enough. All right. So, Eric, I believe we have a wiki.
All right. The story of Carl Merriweather, who believes he experienced an alien encounter at 10 years old and is now trying to reconnect with the UFO as the same location, is what is written here. I'm assuming they meant at the same location, because that makes more sense.
Right. Yeah, makes more sense. That's a fair wiki, because that's, you know, as a, the quote-unquote faux documentary comes right out and basically says this is what it's about. So, and that's exactly what the wiki says. So that's good. I like that wiki. All right, so we'll talk about everything and anything as we go. But before we do throw up the spoiler alert, we talk about generic and general things. And the one thing I wanted, I know Eric's answer already, and I know my answer already. But did any of you, Abe, Chrissy, or Mike, see the trailer? And did the trailer, was it accurate?
I never saw the trailer.
I watched the trailer. I watched the trailer. I felt that it was accurate. It actually kind of piqued my interest. And that's the reason I did watch the trailer, because I really did not know what kind of – I mean, I knew it was a Grays movie. And I knew Phil said that I would probably enjoy it. But I was like, okay, what kind of Grays movie am I getting? You know, so I just wanted to check it out. And I felt that it was accurate. It didn't make it seem overly exciting, although it did present a few of the conflicts that came up. And I do agree mostly with what Abe said and what Mike said, too, in that this is really a movie about, you know, abductees and some of them, and that it's, you know, some of them really struggling. And, you know, I think this really was more of a character study and not like a balls on like alien abduction type thing.
Well,
but I think that's also why I kind of liked it, though. I was just in the mood for something quiet. You know what
Chrissy,
I mean? I didn't want a whole big blowout. Yeah.
To that point, I don't think we should be calling this a Grays movie, because there aren't actually any Grays in the movie. And I think the reason I was so incredibly disappointed by this movie is that they have a picture of the fucking alien on the poster for the movie, and then there are no actual aliens in the movie. It's heavily implied, but we don't actually see them. And that's complete bullshit.
True.
And that's why I was so angry when the movie was over.
I understand. And I get it. I also am wondering, though, I know they put the Skyman thing on the poster. And it was sort of the drawing of it. And I'm not disagreeing with you, Eric. I'm just playing devil's advocate, because this is something I noticed. The gray drawing or the alien-based drawing that's on the poster that I saw kind of mimics in a more stylized way the things that he was drawing as a kid. And at the end of this movie, I sat there and wondered whether or not the filmmakers, because you automatically think, oh, Skyman, it's about an alien. I think the title refers to the main character, Carl Merriweather, that he is the Skyman, right? Because he's looking at the sky. He has, okay, he truly believes that he had this encounter, but it's really more about this guy and his, how his life and the lives of the people in his world were affected by what did or did not happen to him.
Now,
and that's really what I felt this movie was about, that the when it was all said and done, the title did not refer to aliens in any way.
But there's an alien on the poster.
Well, right, no, but what I'm saying is...
And in the movie, he calls the alien the Skyman.
Yeah. Right. But I think metaphorically, it's more referring to him.
Right, it works both ways.
Yes, exactly. It's a dual title.
If I could answer Eric's question, that's a fair point. If you're expecting to see an alien thriller film, you know, found footage, you would expect because of the poster that they have the gray on it. However, as we see in many Netflix documentaries about grays, you know, you never see the gray in any of those quote unquote real documentaries, but they always put the gray on the cover of the poster. So
I've never seen any of those on Netflix.
Oh yeah, me being loving the grays, I check them out every so often. It could lead to false hopes, but the gray is so iconic to alien abduction that a lot of whether it's conventions, whether it's documentaries, whether it's books, they will always use that picture, you know, to go with the marketing, even if the gray isn't actually in the movie, I guess. So,
well, does anyone know how they classified this film other than documentary? Which I think, all right, you all know documentaries can be butchered into putting up bullshit, but at least it's not as usually completely staged.
No, this is not a documentary.
No, right.
Apple,
so this
got,
is
Apple got it wrong.
But so. This does not in any way, shape, or form belong in a horror or thriller category. And if they put it there, Correct. Then they're doing a disservice to the audience. But if you're looking for a found footage film about aliens, where would you look? You would look either in science fiction or horror.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. True.
Yep.
So, I mean, really, character drama might suit this best.
I would agree with that. I think it's really more of a character drama, and I question why it was classified as a quote documentary. But on the other hand, I think that really does kind of goes to show that I could buy this as a real documentary. Like if you did not tell me this was fiction, I would sit there and go, oh my God, this is like, wow. Like, this is a really good documentary about this crazy guy. Like, you know, I would enjoy, and I think that speaks to the fact that as a documentary, a fake documentary, it's one of the best ones I've ever seen.
I don't think he was crazy, though. I think he was on the spectrum.
What, repeat that, Eric?
I don't think the guy was crazy. I think he's on the spectrum.
What do you mean, spectrum?
The autistic spectrum.
Well,
I would agree with that, but Eric, there were other things there too, though. We can talk about all that, but anyway.
I don't even know, though. I mean, if someone is affected as a child by something as traumatic as, say, being abducted at the age of 10 by beings that your parents told you didn't exist, could that make a person grow up and change and act differently as an adult? And had they never experienced this, would they
possibly? I'm just saying, if I met this dude in real life, I would think he was autistic.
Right. He has all the marks of somebody who was so, I would say, probably closer to Asperger's.
I would agree with that.
Which is again all now classified on that same spectrum. We could even get into what actually happens to him at the end. if I'm remembering the ending correctly, because we don't see the Greys. And by the way, the reason we don't see the Greys in those real documentaries is because they're not really there, and it would have hit the headlines if we actually had real footage of real Greys out there. You know, so there is a reason why the ones that are at least pretending to be real documentaries that are dealing with people who really claim to be abducted, why we don't see Greys there. This is a fictional film. We want the money shot, right? We really would like the money shot in this film, which, boy, yes. I just had a weird image of an alien. And anyway,
stop. Just stop.
Mike
and his anal probes.
Oh god, they're not my anal probes. They're this guy's. This guy is the one that got probed.
Right, Mike's the one getting probed.
Not without my anus. No. So
basically, Mike, you're trying to say that because we are told that this is a faux documentary about an alien abduction, you're expecting, even if it's one shot, at least to see that alien.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's exactly.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And so, you know, it's what was the was it one of the Wreck films? Was it Wreck Apocalypse? Or
which one?
I think it's the one that was Wreck on a Boat. I think it was
the
last
one. That's the Apocalypse. Yep.
Right, and the problem was it's called Wreck Apocalypse, and there's no apocalypse in Wreck Apocalypse.
Right. It's just a boat.
And so there are a lot of people. And I think it's a fine zombie possession film. It's for what it is. I mean, it's not as good as the first two, but it's a fine film in that subgenre. But there are a lot of people who came away hating it because there's not a frickin' apocalypse. You promised me an apocalypse. I want the damn apocalypse. You know, you don't want to go to see the tiger circus and see a circus with no tigers.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So the same thing kind of happens here. You want to, you know, if you're going to, don't give me a movie called It and not give me a clown. You're giving me a movie about aliens. I want the damn alien. I understand that if it's a real based one, they're not going to be able to give you a real alien. You got to deal with what's there because it's not technically staged officially. Not staged, in theory.
Right, anyway. And I think that's where people will have their problems with this film if they go into it. They have to know that it is basically a faux documentary. So it's really following a man who says he was abducted at the age of 10, and now 30 years later, at the age of 40, he plans to go back to the location where he was abducted because he says he feels something that tells him that they're coming back now to meet him. And that's kind of makes you think, okay, good, we're going to see the aliens. And sure, I was expecting to see Greys as well. But it really isn't. It really is trying to pretend that it's one of those fake documentaries that we see. I mean, those quasi-real documentaries that we see on Netflix.
Based on true events kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, or, you know, interviewing all these people at the alien conventions, and they give their stories, and there's no proof, but go on, Eric.
And like, in my opinion, even if you're going to do, like, a faux documentary type of thing, like, there was a movie a few years ago that came out called Phoenix Forgotten. Did any of you see that?
No.
Okay.
Yeah,
I well, I was much more expecting that type of thing when I went into this movie rather than what I got. And actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't think you actually see any aliens in that movie either. But it's a whole hell of a lot more satisfying because things actually happen.
Oh, yeah. All right. That's fair. Well, but again, I think this is where it makes us think it's going to be something like that film that you mentioned, Eric, but what it really is and wants to be is a character study about a person and what an alien abduction did to him and how it affects him now, 30 years later, and then his journey to either try to prove that he was right or to
No, I get it. Closure. I just didn't like it.
Yeah, all right, that's fair.
Right, and I think we're all just beating around the bush at this point. We're saying the same thing, is that this is going to be you're going to make or break this film in a large degree based on whether or not you are going to be disappointed by the fact that you will never see an alien in it.
Sure, sure. Right, right. Yeah, and I did read all the reviews, or a good portion of the reviews later, and those who did not enjoy it basically said pretty much what you, Mike, and you, Eric, were mentioning, which is they're expecting a kinetic film like the Blair Witch Project, even if we didn't see the aliens, just as we never saw the Blair Witch.
And that's pretty much what Phoenix Forgotten was. In fact, I think I referred to it as Blair Witch in the Desert when I was talking to somebody about it. So I was much more expecting that type of energy.
Well, right. And I don't even need that, but like you had Willow Creek, right? Willow Creek was a story about people in search
also boring.
In search of Bigfoot. But Willow Creek has a very intense... That's Alexa. I don't know why she chimed up. But Willow Creek has a very intense, about 2-minute sequence in a tent of the characters in there when you can hear Bigfoot moving around. The problem is it then goes on for another about 18 minutes and it becomes a very tedious scene. But they do give you something, right? I don't think you had to have seen the alien, but we could have had something that, you know, did give us the aliens, you know, some sort of, you know, think about the scene from Signs where they're in the basement and it goes dark.
Right.
Right. You didn't see anything, but it scared the fuck out of you.
Right.
This is clearly not a thing that's trying to scare you. And again, that's fine. I don't think that it's not like they tried to scare you and failed at it. They didn't try. And I'm not going to criticize someone for not doing a thing I wanted them to do when they weren't trying to do it in the first place. And they didn't promise me that they were going to do it. It's just a weird, you just got to know there's going to be no thrills. This is entirely 90 minutes of character exploration.
Yeah. It's pretty much a dissection of a person's past and, you know, what their thoughts and their experience. Just this entire examination of this one individual from his childhood to his traumas, to some of his family issues, all intersected with this part of the Skyman. But it is mostly about this guy, about Carl Weather. It's, you know, the aliens are just kind of, as I said earlier, is more of a backdrop towards looking at him.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that makes him an interesting character. Is the question is, would you, if you saw something, would you go around telling people? Because you know, the moment you start talking about this, unless you go to an alien convention, and even when this guy goes to the alien conventions, people think he may be lying. But is it something that you would talk about, or is it something that you would just shut your trap? And this guy here seems to not worry about what people think of him and decides to talk about it, I guess, constantly to those who would listen. And as a result, it also shows the alienation of the town folk that happens because of this. People start thinking he's, oh, that's the crazy guy in the town. So I think it has something to say about that too. But again, Mike, yeah, you're right. I mean, is it really trying to say these things? You know, is it a symbolic of all these things in real life, or is it really just a character study? And I was thinking, Chrissy, you would probably be able to answer that best. Do you think this a lot of this is just an allegory about loneliness or people being touched with something when they're a child, or people can be cruel to those who are different, and in this case different because you say you were abducted and people just look at you as you're crazy, or do you think he was just trying to make a faux documentary, the director?
Well, I think this movie certainly does have some certain things to say about the human condition. One thing, I mean, first of all, what was very telling in this film, and it's mentioned several times, is that Carl's father was in Vietnam. And we get the sense that perhaps as a veteran of Vietnam, that the father may have been suffering from some of that trauma. And that's what I was going to bring up earlier, we know that, you know, Carl really truly believes that he had an alien experience, right? However, when he takes us to that, you know, the hanging on to the thing from the past, which is a good point, Phil, that you bring up, that he goes back there and they would play in the yard and live in this container, which, let's face it, it's kind of weird.
They were preppers.
Right. But also that the father, you know, we know from history that many Vietnam veterans came home with mental health issues from post-traumatic stress. You know, from battle fatigue, that's even mentioned in the film, because of what they had been through. And so they may have been, you know, healthy, adjusted individuals when they went to Vietnam, and what they saw there was so horrendous. And then coming home just really permanently damaged these people. And so when he first started talking about, this is when I saw the alien and I felt this hum in the ground and all this, my first reaction was almost like, I wonder if maybe there was more going on in the family there with the father having some issues, and that this was this kid's way of processing it. You know, children will, if they have traumatic home lives or if there's something terrible going on in the home, they will, you know, indulge in fantasies. They will. And it's very possible that he invented this in his mind because he was trying to escape something at that age. And then as he got older, he just started to believe his own bullshit, which also happens. And so that's one thing. The other thing, what was the rest of the question, Phil?
Well, to add on to the question, what about the father and his co-pilots of like the helicopter or whatever the gunship they were using in Nam, where didn't he say that they said they saw a UFO, but they never reported it, even though he told Carl? And
Yes. And that's where the battle fatigue thing is mentioned. So that's why I put that in there. That's why I mentioned it. But, I remember what I was going to say. What was interesting about the garage, you're talking about, you know, does this film have something to say about loneliness and isolation and things like that? There's a very telling line early on in the film where Carl says he goes out into this garage, which is like full of shit, right? And he says, Gina hates to come out here, says I'm a pack rat. I find something broken, I bring it back here and I fix it. That's really indicative of mental stressors that had been put on him as a child, whether or not the alien encounter he had was real. Okay. He believed it was, or he invented it as some kind of escape mechanism to escape whatever was going on in the home. Cause there is a line later where the mother says, oh my God, you're just like your father. So there's that whole indication there too, that's very, it's very loaded, even though they don't really go into it. This negative thing that happened to him, either way, whether it was real or whether he invented it, sparked this lifelong obsession with trying to fix it. People will often become obsessed with things that have broken their lives in an effort to try to make peace with it or to get closure or to figure out why it happened to them. In other words, you guys have all heard that cliche, right? Let's keep doing the same pattern over and over and see if we get different results. And that's the definition of, quote, insanity.
Right.
Okay. Right. Well, yeah, that's what people, if they have something really traumatic that happened to them, they will frequently try to repeat those patterns in metaphorical ways to try to get it to come out with a different outcome. And that is also a frequent, like, I know that's a thing of like narcissistic abusers, right? Women who are in abusive relationships. Many times what they find out, many times, I'm not saying every time, it's not an absolute fact. Many times what they discover in these women, or men can do it too, in the psychology of these individuals, is that they had an abusive parent or an abusive uncle or an abusive brother or an abusive somebody, right? And so they are automatically, without realizing it, attracted to people with this sort of abusive personality, because in their mind, they are trying to restructure that first damaging relationship and try to get it to come out with a different ending. And so that is kind of what I thought was at the heart of this character study, Phil. It was really about this guy who was trying to fix whatever it was that had happened to him when he was a child. And I think the alien abduction thing or the alien encounter thing, to me, that was really just his mind. You know, he was a kid. You know, he says he ran out there because he was chasing a rabbit or something. I forget what he said. But I'm not really sure if he didn't. Why was he running outside? I mean, he says he was chasing a rabbit, but then he says he's not sure. So did he run out of the trailer because there was something terrible going on in the trailer with his family? Like, was the dad yelling? Was the dad throwing shit? We don't know.
Well, let me ask you this, Chris. You know? What do you think of the other brother who we never meet and doesn't live in this part of California and has moved away to Alaska? And we don't really get reasons, you know, whether because of work, military, or he just felt his family were crazy kooks and he wanted to get the hell out.
Oh, well, see, I thought that was more of the brother's way of escaping the trauma. That was her way of that was his way of getting out. He didn't want anything to do with them. That, to me, was a loud indicator that there was probably some abuse or something going on in that family that they don't talk about. Now, granted, I don't know if the filmmakers actually intended that. I don't know if that's what I got out of it from looking at it.
Well, and there are,
I always say, we all bring our own shit to the movie when we watch it. So that could just be the way that I interpreted it because of me. You know, right. You know what I mean?
And there are people out there who have suggested that a lot of these abductees, you know, who come up with these memories under hypnotherapy, that they may be repressing an abusive relationship in the past, and this is how they're processing it. This is how they're dealing with it. And it's certainly a case where now it has become such a popular meme in society in the last 40 years. A kid can't escape it, right? A kid is familiar with this concept, right? So you can't necessarily say that they're all just coming out of it independently and spontaneously. You know, culture has certainly influenced their perception, their understanding of this alien abduction thing. And, you know, if you think about it, somebody comes into your room at night and does an invasive procedure on you.
Yes. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Right, Mike, that's interesting that you brought that up, because there's a film that Mysterious Skin, it's called, about a boy and a girl who believe they were alien abducted, and then they find out that it was most likely they were molested or something crazy happened to them, and they just replaced what actually happened to them as alien abduction.
Right, so and I want to say, by the way, since we keep harping on there's no grays, or we were harping on it. If this film had ended with it coming out that there were no grays, that this was a thing that was in his head, or he had been suppressing something, or it had just ended with him being disappointed that they didn't come back for him, by which you may infer the ending of the film, then that's also, I think, perfectly legitimate. It's as an ending.
Right.
Because
I agree.
Because, again, the idea is then the dad goes to the store to get the milk, but they don't have any milk. You get something there that is a change in the ending of what you're expecting. From a storytelling point of view, they said this is exactly what's going to happen, and that is exactly what did happen, and there were no bumps or twists along the way. We just got exactly what was promised. And that's kind of a weird way to tell a story.
I always thought that it was also just part of not just about validation and just answers, but I think also trying to this division between the past and the present, and that I always thought, because I know that we could say the alien is called the Skyman, but we've also been calling Carl the Skyman, but I also thought the dad in some way was also the Skyman as well, because he was a helicopter pilot. And I thought this was more about the separation between Carl and his father.
Well, that's another thing, too, I felt was important, too, is that, let's say the father was a decent man, because I guess it depends on how you come to look at the film. I just assume that the guy didn't have mental illness and that he had the trauma at the age of 10 and it just screwed him up, which made him mentally ill. It wasn't like Asperger's or anything like that. And I also felt that his father, he was real close to, and it seemed like the sister was too. And then when the father passed away due to PTSD and various other complications, that loss and his father's death also affected somebody as well. And that's a huge loss too, when you lose a parent at a younger age, especially one that you were very close to.
Well, and there's another interesting thing too, in that, you know, they do depict Carl. And again, to me, this was another clue that maybe something was not completely right in that house that we're just not told. Not only does the mom say you're just like your father when he goes to visit her, but he really genuinely cares about his mom. Like, we clearly see how much he cares about her. He brings her the pistachios.
Yeah.
And then
honestly, that was the only part of the movie that interested me at all, because my mom was in a home. She was in a nursing home, and they got that right as far as going there and seeing this person there that's the person that you love, but they're not the same as they used to be.
Yeah.
It's kind of rough, and they got that right.
Yeah.
My mother
was like that, too. I've been there.
And it's really upset. He's genuinely upset when they come back his mother's insurance.
Yeah.
And notice, too, that he doesn't get angry. He's upset. He's hurt. You can see that he's very hurt. He's more wounded than he's angry. I mean, he's not out there screaming and yelling, going, oh, rah, rah, rah. You know, he's more like, it's just they throw him away like yesterday's trash. Like, he's so hurt. And that also, his reaction was also sort of an indication to me that because of his father's, issues that he may have had, that the father might have been also kind of violent too. And because sometimes children of violent parents end up being very sort of, they don't express their anger. You know, they go one of two ways. They either end up being just like them and becoming violent just like the violent parent, or they go the other way. And they sort of don't really ever express their anger or get in touch with it, because the anger was such a scary thing for them to see when they were young that they can't even deal with their own anger because it scares them.
Well,
Does that make any sense?
Well, Chrissy, it makes sense.
I don't know. Listen, I'm just talking out my ass.
No, I agree with you. It makes sense. But I'm thinking it's a different emotion and not anger. I'm thinking it was melancholy. So the father was a decent man who wasn't violent, but he was a defeatist and melancholy and all that due to PTSD and various other things, that it affected the family, where the children saw their father, their beloved father, hurt mentally and then eventually pass, and the mother being the only one that was really angry because she obviously didn't know how to support someone that had mental illness, maybe. And the brother left because he wanted to run away from both those feelings, and he probably didn't like the mother anyway, because the mother was obviously the one that was saying, "Oh, your father," and the father was mentally ill, and that was sad. But also seeing his own brother acting crazy too by saying, "I saw an alien," and then the mother just being, bitch. So that's how I look at it, rather than anger or violence.
I got always got a sense that Carl was still a child inside.
Even, as aside,
I thought that he had still was almost like a child still trapped in the an aging body that hasn't moved on from what had happened. And this was almost like trying to complete that growth by finding what he's been looking for.
Well, he's put his life on hold, right? It's literal arrested development. He's put his life on hold since the age of 10, waiting for Skyman to return 30 years later.
Almost like he's waiting for a parent to return.
Right, yeah, that's a fair point, Abe. Yeah, and I that's a really good point. But, I would agree with that, because, I mean, not that everybody has to get married or everybody has to own a house or everybody has to find a job or a hobby that really interests them. But for him, it looks like he put all that on hold. You know, it shows that he has no interest in the opposite sex, because it appears he's heterosexual, even if he doesn't care about the woman, and he doesn't want to leave the home. You know, he's still living with his sister, and he's still kind of taking care of his mother at the nursing home. And he does menial, the jobs that aren't really a big deal. It's like mowing the lawn. What is it, Mike?
Menial.
Yeah, menial. Like mowing the lawn of a little storefront and stuff. So it's like, you're right, Abe. He's kind of stunted, and you are too, right, Mike? He's kind of stunted, and instead, all that matters to him is this one infatuation about the alien, which makes sense. But most people who've had traumatic experiences, even if this one is supernatural, you would hope that they could still compartmentalize and still be able to do other things in their life instead of letting it eat them, like it appears that it has Carl.
Yeah, and it's definitely the way he reacts to other things around him. His environment too is also part of that as well. And like, for example, he's still attached to the same place where his father had tried to quote unquote prep them inside of this kind of little base, the same household. Where his mother's staying and stuff like that. There's all these anchors that are a part of this arrested development.
He's 40 years old, right? So he, was born in 1980 and or thereabouts, 79, 80. So he's lived a good portion of his life in a world without the internet. It was entirely possible for him to get away from this if he wanted to, right? So you can't say, well, he's stuck in this town where they're never going to let him forget that he's the crazy alien kid. If he had wanted to pick up and move away and, get a job, where somebody couldn't do a Google search to find out you were the crazy person who believed you were abducted by a child, it was very possible for him to have done it. Right? He didn't have to necessarily stay in that town and deal with all those issues. He has chosen to stay there.
Yeah. I mean, he's actually been keeping all the records and gathering information and books. You know, it's not like something being thrusted on him. He's actually, made it his goal to keep going with this.
Well, and what's interesting is that even if he wanted to let this eat away his soul like it's doing, he still could have moved like 7 towns away, like Mike said, and done it there anonymously. Behind closed doors, and then in public, never mentioned aliens at all, and he could have been, just another person rather than the person everybody points to. But as Mike mentioned, he has decided to stay in the town that he grew up in, where everybody knows that he's the crazy kid that said he saw an alien.
And also because, you know, that's, I'm going to argue, he knows that's where the Skyman will return for him one day.
Right, right. That's true. But again, though, the Skyman, as we discover, happened at their prepper house, not their real house, right? So basically what it is the setup is that his father was a prepper. And for folks who don't know what a prepper is, me and Mike are very familiar with it because of Far Cry 5. It's basically people who think there's going to be a race war or a nuclear war or the government will do something terrible, whatever.
Or a pandemic.
Or a pandemic, exactly. And so what they do is they build a home or a bunker out in the middle of nowhere, and they fill it with a generator and canned goods and bottles of water and all these other things. So they're prepared for months to either survive forever or at least until the issue is over that's happening in the world. And so what his father did, or this family's patriarch did, was he created a bunker type thing out in the middle of the desert, basically taking these Chinese-made
freight
shipping containers from, you know, the big boats, and bought them cheap, and he put them out in the middle of the desert and turned them into a house. And so they would go out there a good portion of the year to live, including the mother. And as a result, there's a lot of isolation because you're isolated from the general public. So that may have also affected his childhood in a bit as well. And that's why I think you, Mike, and you, Chrissy, have mentioned that maybe there was other things going on, because was he really just out hunting rabbits that night, or was he just, you know, seeing his father cracking and crying in the corner and his mother throwing pans at the father or something and he didn't want to see
it?
Who knows?
I enjoyed that set. The container, the way it was made into a little house. I loved the feel of it, where like there was the crappy camper that you can't live in it now. Like it was like a relic of their past and it was all frozen in time. I thought that was really, really neat. And I loved just the way that little trailer, I mean, it was kind of brilliant. The way they had put a bathroom in it and the mother had put like the little fuzzy toilet, you know, cover on the toilet seat. I just thought, as just a set, not for no other reason, you know, I just wanted to mention that. I thought that set was fantastic. I really thought that was well done.
It is apparently a common thing for preppers to use shipping cargo containers as their thing. In fact, Phil, you mentioned Far Cry 5. If you look, all these underground bunkers are buried cargo containers.
Right, right, yeah. Oh, and the movie Take Shelter, right? His tornado shelter was one of those cargo containers underground. But yeah, that's a good point, Mike. So
well, and I did buy a short story for 34 Orchards spring issue, not the upcoming fall issue, but the spring issue, because I loved this story and I didn't have any room for it in this issue, so I went ahead and bought it for the next one. But it's about a guy who's living in a shipping container underground. So yeah, I don't even know why I said that stupid thing about why that was so novel to me, but it just feels like it was. I just thought it was a very cool set.
Well, I imagine, and I am not in any way impugning the prepper culture who can go around and say, I told you so for the next several months. But if you're a relatively normal person who is not a prepper, it's probably not a thing that you would come across, right? It's probably not a thing that, you know, and I guess they have those shows, right? They have some shows about being preppers.
Yeah, I think there was a couple of them, yeah.
So, you know, why would a normal person, meaning a person who's not a prepper, know that? Why would they make that connection? Unless they've played Far Cry 5.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, that's true. And Take Shelter there's a big fight between the husband and wife, and that's actually related to mental illness too. The reason he buys the shipping container and he buries it in the ground is because he says the end of the world's coming, and you know, is he mentally ill or is he actually having visions? And the thing is, the wife says we need that money for our daughter's earpiece because she's deaf and they can get an implant that'll make her hear and all this other stuff. And you're wasting your money. So you know, there's a lot of people that spend this money on this prepper stuff. And you know, if you're independently wealthy, you know, no big deal. You know, but if you're not independently wealthy and you're spending all that money, are you wasting the money because you're just being paranoid, or and bringing unneeded stress into a marriage or to a family, right? And it appears, based off of what the sister says in this movie, the mother wasn't too happy about the prepper, you know, stuff going on in the family. And but she, I guess, lost out or just went along with it or something.
Well, that was the other thing that made me wonder too, because the son Carl says she pretty much went along with whatever, you know what I mean? So it just made me wonder what that family dynamic was all about.
Right.
It's definitely dysfunctional.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, we don't actually ever find out the whole story, right? And again, it's just told by what the sister and what Carl says. And nothing is to the point where we hear anything that is horrendous. But, you know, I mean, when you have one brother that's left, a mother that's seems like a B-I-T-C-H, a father that basically died of depression, you figure there must have been something that was going on as well. And then, of course, both parents having to deal with a 10-year-old who claims they saw an alien and continues to say that when he's 14 and when he's 16 and when he's 18 and when he's 20.
And gets some publicity over it.
Exactly. So that doesn't help either. You know, and it's their child, so they love their child, but, you know.
Do they, though?
Well.
No, it's – well, again, the child – that's going to be a pressure on a family because, all right, so, you know, the parents, whether they go to work or they're going out shopping at the grocery store, you know, people are looking at them going – oh, that's their parents. That's the parents of the crazy kid. Kid who says he was abducted by aliens.
Right.
You know, so there's going to be those sort of whispers. You know, parents like, I'm going to cancel that play date because your child is crazy, or he's not going to be invited to the birthday parties. You know, so it happens, and that's going to take a toll on the parents.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Now, a couple other things of note. The film actually goes to some major sites, real sites, that documented, quote unquote, documented UFO sightings have occurred, or weird anomalies, and whatnot. And they also talk about the owls. And that the book that they actually even mention in the movie that talks about owls and their significance with aliens actually does exist, because I then looked it up on Amazon. It's like, oh yeah, there it is.
That's kind of interesting too. They hint that at on the poster. You can kind of see an owl shape of you know, almost like a crown on the alien's head.
Yeah, it's the owl, exactly. Yeah. Now, Chris,
I definitely remember that being a part of UFO literature back when I was. Yeah. Really, really into that stuff around my senior year in college.
Wasn't that part of The Fourth Kind, too?
One I never watched.
Fourth Kind?
Yeah, it was, Chrissy.
Yeah, I liked that movie. That one actually scared me. There were things in there that really scared me in that movie. But I seem to remember the owls being a thing in that.
Yeah. The owls are supposed to symbolize – the owls have like a sixth sense – about aliens, basically, is the folklore that we have. You know, like dogs can detect earthquakes before humans. You know, owls are supposed to be able to have a sixth sense that aliens are coming, and then are the harbingers to the people who are supposed to be, I guess, presented to the aliens. And that's what the folklore is, I guess, based off of what I read after seeing this film, because I hadn't heard anything about that. And I forgot about the fourth kind, that owls were in that. So that is an interesting thing. I don't know what owl – I mean, like, Chris, you always talk about crows or various other types of birds and what they symbolize. And you're like the biggest bird watcher I know. I mean, you even sent – all of us a bird book along with some of your fiction, which we actually my wife loved the book actually. What about owls? What do they represent? What's going on here?
Well, there are some interesting things about owls. It depends on which culture you're in. Again, yeah. I know I always preface any time I mention this because every culture, every religion, different symbols or animals or birds means different things.
Yeah. Wisdom, for example, in Greek with Athena, because her spirit animal is a owl.
Right. So it's wisdom primarily in the Greek myths. In some Native American culture, I can't remember, don't quote me on that. There's one culture that actually looks at them as magicians. Like, in other words, when they show up, there's spell work afoot. You know, somebody is playing with magic. They also can be symbols of the paranormal, meaning the presence of otherworldly things that we don't know about. Not like crows or ravens, who are more like messengers from the other side. This is more like, oh, there's an owl present, meaning there's an otherworldly being, okay, whether it be a ghost or, in this case, an alien or something like that. They, of course, are very smart, so that's part of their whole lore that surrounds them, too. But the other thing that's really interesting is that in some cultures, they are they can represent the souls of another person. Not like, okay, when you see a cardinal, okay, a cardinal is supposed to represent, oh, somebody who passed away is visiting you. Okay, but that's more like they're coming to, you know, they're like telling you that that person is present, that that person's around you. Not that the bird is an actual visitor itself, right? Owls are different in that if you are visited by an owl, and again, I am so sorry, I forget what this is. I think it's Native American, actually, is actually the soul of the person that passed on is in the owl that comes to visit you, so that you could actually have a conversation with this dead person through this owl. And the reason that I'm particularly hung up on that one, and that does kind of connect to this film, if you think about it, because, you know, he's believing that the aliens are going to come back for him, so that they're not necessarily, they're harbingers, basically, in this movie. But, I don't know. I think he more believes that these owls actually are not necessarily harbingers, but that they are here to come and get him. There's a couple of lines in there that kind of made me think that.
Continue.
Just the one quick personal story I wanted to share about why I'm particularly passionate about that particular meaning. My sister was always obsessed with owls from a very young age, just obsessed with them. And so I would always buy her owl stuff for Christmas, you know, things with owls, T-shirts, whatever. So we get a little older, and I think maybe only 4 years ago, I was doing research for a short story, and I was telling my sister about this, and she just gasps on the other end of the phone, and I go, why? You know, I wasn't thinking we were having a deep conversation. I was just telling her what I was writing about. And she goes, well, do you know why I'm so obsessed with owls? And I'm like, no, why? She said, because after my mother died, okay, she said there was an owl that came to the bedroom window every night and talked to me, and it was mommy. Now, I have no idea if that's true or not. I don't know if that was her childhood mind making that shit up. But there was a tree right outside her bedroom window, and there was an owl's nest there. So I don't know if, you know what I mean? That just kind of freaked me out. To this day, that freaks me out. So anytime that story just freaks me. So anytime I see an owl in a movie like this, I automatically go to that meaning. But I think here he said they were, like I said, harbingers, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And here, there's a book called The Messengers, Owl Synchronicity and the UFO Abductee by a guy named Mike Cleland. And you can find that on, you know, Amazon or wherever. The reason I pulled it up was because the blurb kind of gives us at least a quick overview. This is what
another interesting thing, though, too, is that in some cultures, they're considered like child stealers. Like, in other words, parents use them to get their children not to cry too much because they'll like a boogeyman. They'll be like, if you don't stop crying, the owl is going to come and take you away. And that definitely kind of connects to this in this story in kind of a weird way, because, right, you know, well, owl's telling him he's going to be carried away. Right. So,
yeah, I mean, yeah. The owls are interesting in you know, anatomically, right? Because they're they have a flat face, which normal birds don't, and you know, they look straight on like a person does, you know, instead of having eyes more positioned on the sides of their heads. And you know, humans have a predisposed bias towards eyes, right? You know, like the eyes are the window to the soul. So you have this bird that's looking straight at you with these enormous eyes. It's not hard to see that people have imagined all sorts of stuff. And then you throw in the fact that it comes at night when all, you know, when we put all of our mystical experiences occurring. There's not a whole lot of mystical experiences that happen at noon. So owls tend to be symbols for lots of things from lots of cultures.
What happens at noon?
Nothing. That's my point.
No, he's saying that, you know, they're creatures of the night because the dark is really where all these scary things happen. Like he's saying, nothing scary happens at freaking noon.
So
any animal that comes at night is a little more spooky than the animals like squirrels where we see every 10 seconds.
Right. So, squirrels aren't harbingers of anything. You know, they're not. I'm sure there's myths and legends about every animal that's out there, just about. Owls in particular.
But common daytime animals, you know, you see them all the time. It's not a big deal.
But right. And even like the intelligence, you know, crows are far more intelligent than owls are. Owls are about okay intelligence. But it's the eyes. The eyes convince us that these are all knowing things because it's easy to get lost into an owl's eyes. I know I used to feed one at the zoo and I had to get really, really close to it. And it's a very unnerving experience, to have a great horned owl, a couple of feet away from your face. So I'm just saying, so I understand where all this, you know, can come from. And again, what are the aliens? What are the things we know? The aliens come at night and they've got big black eyes, right? So it's very easy to draw a connection between the aliens and they're from the sky, right? So it's easy to see a connection between owls and aliens.
Now, the blurb for this Mike Cleland's book kind of talks about it. It says, and as strange as this might seem, owls are also showing up in conjunction with the UFO experience. Mike Cleland has collected a wealth of firsthand accounts in which owls manifest in the highly charged moments that surround alien contact. There is a strangeness to these accounts that defy simple explanation. This book explores implications that go far beyond what more conservative researchers would dare consider, but the owl connection encompasses more than UFO experience. It also includes profound synchronicities, ancient archetypes, dreams, shamanistic experiences, personal transformation and death, from the mythic legends of our ancient past to the firsthand accounts of the UFO abductee, owls are playing some vital role. This is also a deeply personal story, et cetera, et cetera. So synchronicity, basically the simultaneous occurrence of events which appear significantly related but have no discernible causal connection. So whatever reason, it does – the little blurb of that book, or what it talks about owls and aliens, is kind of talks about the things that Chrissy mentioned with the shamans and folklore of I guess, other cultures or different cultures that from bygone days, maybe. And just the fact that, Mike, you mentioned they're at night, they're huge. They don't have their eyes on the side of their head like goose or robins or turkeys. And
the other interesting thing about them too, Phil, I mean, not to interrupt, but I just wanted to spit it out before I forget because my brain is not connecting.
They're hunters?
Well, a lot of them fly silently. You know, a lot of them, you don't hear them coming because they have to be quiet to hit predators.
Right, because they night hunt at night, and a lot of animals at night survive by hearing.
Right.
So you turn around and all of a sudden, they're fucking there. Just like the great, you know, you turn around and shit.
When you least expect them, and sometimes you don't catch sight of them before they're already gone.
Yeah, their feathers lack the same kind of wax coating that a lot of birds do. And I always, like, whenever I had to do a bird talk, I always had owl's feathers on hand so you could hear. You could, like, rub an owl feather and a goose feather, and you could hear the goose feather, and you don't hear the owl feather just as they rub against each other.
Right. Right. Yeah, because not only are they hunters, but they're in silent, but they do it at night, too. And so the things they eat, oddly, are different animals than the ones we see. You know, it's probably not squirrels or chipmunks because they're sleeping at night. It's probably the moles and the possums and field mice and all these other things that come out at night, and maybe even foxes, and they come down and they take them out.
They mostly come out at night, mostly.
Yes. Game over, man. Game over. I do like the synchronicity part of that whole explanation too, which is related yet with no discernible causal connection, and that kind of makes it even more spooky too, I think, because you know you have these birds that are different anyway because you don't see them often, so they're kind of weird, like bats or something, and they, at least in this folklore of alien mythology, they are the harbingers of the aliens, and that kind of is interesting because synchronicity wise they're related, but for no real reason. They just are related because people said they appear, you know. It's not, you know, obviously it's you know, quote unquote fake, like the Greys and Men in Black and all that stuff anyway, but for the mythology that's been created, owls appear right before aliens, supposedly. And that is kind of interesting for non-causic reasons. They just do. And there's no explanation. So, kind of curious. And that scene was pretty cool in the movie, I felt. The owl scene. And these owls were big in this movie. They were like as big as dogs. Like monsters. Let's see, what else? What do we want to talk about? There's a couple of things, like the magnet loses its magneticism, and I liked how his friend went straight to the norm, which is, oh, they just must be defective. You know, well, the cow is more apt to think it's something else. And then I also was interested with the government and how the military base that's not far from the property in the desert that his father bought was trying to kick them off their own property, which was kind of interesting and unsurprising in today's day and age.
I think is really cool is like all these little events we start to see, aside from the ending itself, feel like it can be explained. You know, there's a lot of, it's very, most of the film is very grounded before the big finale, but you know, it's essentially just logically you explain certain things away, and you see how Carl believed these events being connected to the Skyman, but you can also see how they could be explained away. It's not like in those horror movies where there's something obviously fucking wrong and the character's too stupid to figure it out. and just continue trying to rationalize it, even though it's, the evidence is right there. But here, you know, you can believe that the government wants to move out of the way, just do some testing, or because the ground's restricted or something like that. You can believe some owls showed up, or the technology has technical issues and stuff like that. But you can also see, because of how extensively Carl researches all this, you can see how he believes that there's something else going on. It's also kind of interesting to see how his sister starts to get into it even early on, too, where she kind of just sees, calls out the bullshit on the agents, trying to tell them to leave, and says, it's her that says we don't have to leave. You know, we should have to leave. Even though she's been very reluctant up to that point to go along with this.
That's an awesome point, Abe. Yeah, because the sister just went along as a witness because they needed people for the documentary to witness Carl. And so he chose his brother and his sister. And so the sister went along. He chose his friend and his sister. And his sister went along just because, you know, it's her brother and she loves her brother. But yeah, you're right. Up until the government gets involved, she was like, this is stupid. I can't wait to kill home. This is ridiculous. And then when the government comes down, she became the true, quote unquote, prepper or Far Cry 5 character, which is no government's going to tell me what to do. And I thought that was interesting, too, because prior to that, she was like, all right, are we done yet? You know, so that was an excellent point that you brought that up, Abe. I'm glad you brought that up. And I do like the point that everything could be explained, right? So even though there's a technical malfunctions with some of the equipment, it could just be technical malfunctions. Or it could be the magnetism and whatever that, you know, quote unquote, the aliens bring or whatever. And the government may be working with alien, you know, Area 54 type stuff. Or maybe they just wanted them out of there because they were in the way, you know, for whatever reason the government says, you know, just get out of here. So, yeah, that's all fair points. What about the alien conventions that Kyle goes to? It appears that he was brought there. He wanted to go anyway, but it appears that, quote unquote, the documentary decided to pay for his trips to these conventions. And it appears that 50% of the convention goers are people like me who just love the Greys and want to collect all the memorabilia and say, this is cool. But then there's the other 50% who actually believe it's true and claim they were abducted or whatever. And there's an experience at one of these conventions where Kyle is interviewed by two like podcasters or bloggers or somebody. And they're there obviously because they just think aliens are cool. While they were kind of surprised that when they interviewed Kyle, that Kyle was like really a believer, and they were like,
oh yeah, shocked. They were like, that was weird, she says afterward, right? That was weird. Yeah. And I did kind of want to talk about that a little bit, because I think that incident really keys into one of the themes about this movie that you mentioned before, and that is people not being accepted. Like, you know, we had mentioned that somebody had mentioned Asperger's and kind of not, you know, kind of Carl being on the spectrum, which I believe could very well be the case. I mean, he certainly has a lot of the traits, like knows how to fix things, is very genius when certain things, can do math in his head like that, you know, no issue at all, really fast. But I felt so bad for him. And the podcasters were really nice to him. But then at the end,
he didn't know they were laughing about him after he left. So no, for him, at least,
it was serious for him. Yeah, it was real. They wanted to interview me, like, you know, and they gave me a cookie. But even then, he isn't sure how to process it. He's just kind of standing there like, I don't really know what that was about. Like, you know. Yeah. But I thought the convention piece was very interesting. I've never been to a UFO convention, but I'd like to go at some point just because that's something I'm interested in. But yeah, I enjoyed that. And I mean, you know, these UFO abductees too, these are, there's a lot of famous cases. And Phil, I did want to take a minute to just kind of talk about the couple of cases that were mentioned at the beginning of the film when he's going through all of his research.
I think they're important too, because some, like I said, some of them, they actually went to the farm, you know, so they went to the actual locations of some real UFO ones, specifically the ones that you're about to mention, besides obviously the one in New Hampshire, because that's on the other side of the country from where he was.
Right, right. Like Benny and Barney Hill, you know, Betty and Barney Hill, we know about them. They were abducted in New Hampshire, or claimed they were. There was a movie about this called The UFO Incident with James Earl Jones. And who was the female? The woman. I forgot. And I sent you a copy of that, too.
Yeah, she got an Academy Award. What the hell's her name? She was in Bonnie and Clyde. And she got an Academy Award nomination for that.
Yeah, anyway.
I'll get
Faye Dunaway?
No, yeah, well, it was the sister-in-law of Faye Dunaway in that movie. UFO yeah. incident. I'll get, and she was also in All in the Family as a guest a lot. Hold on a second, I got it right here. The UFO incident TV movie. She was big. Estelle Parsons.
Yeah, Estelle Parsons. Yes, that was her name. So she was in that. And believe it or not, that's where a lot of people from our generation, Gen X, do get a fascination with these alien abduction movies, because that movie, even though it was a TV movie, was absolutely terrifying.
Oh my God, it's the best one.
It was very terrifying, especially if you were a young child. It was really scary. However, that took place in the early 60s. And what made that such a big deal was that it was the very first alien abduction story, for lack of a better term, that was widely publicized in the United States. This was the first one to really go everywhere. You know what I mean? Where everybody was talking about it and across the country. And that was kind of a big deal, because before
localized. It was kind of interesting too, Chrissy, because they both went into hypnosis, and they both came out with the exact same story. And it was always related to the Greys, continuously the Greys, Greys, Greys. It wasn't like we were making it up, or we actually probably saw a bear, but we weren't sure. You know, they actually so it made it even more spooky, because it was like so the only way people could explain that it wouldn't be true is that they kind of hypnotized each other, in a sense, by just believing something to the point of the Moonies or something, where you just believe because you're told you believe and you think it's true, and then it becomes part of you, even though it never occurred.
Well, and it was also a really important case too, because if I'm not mistaken, Phil, what I remember historically is that is one of the first times that maybe hypnosis was actually taken sort of seriously
as
a way to treat people. Sure. I can't swear to that, but I think so. And then there was another one. The second one he mentions is Rendlesham Forest. And this does also connect, because each of these sort of give little clues to what – okay, if you listen to each of these stories that we're telling you, these four that I'm going to mention, each little piece shows up in, like, his belief system or in how this kind of thing plays out, very subtle little pieces of it. So that's why it was sort of important to sort of know these. I had to go look them up to refresh my memory. But Rendlesham Forest, that's in England. And basically in the 80s, there were all these, or late 70s, early 80s, somewhere in there. There was a series of lights and reported, and nobody could figure them out. And there were some people that claimed that UFOs actually landed. And they happened right outside like a U.S. Air Force base. So that was noted, and again, here he's near an Air Force base, a military base. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, we have a. I'm right by Pine Bush in New York, and there's an Air Force base near there, and that's a hotbed of UFO sightings.
Yeah, yeah, because I mean, and I would agree that, you know, it probably is, because I mean, Look, it's an Air Force base, man. We don't know what they're testing over there. You know, come on. It's probably all just their shit, and they don't want to admit it. So they just write it off because they're probably testing secret things. And, you know, that's fine, whatever. But, you know, that doesn't mean it's like an alien. Like, there's an Air Force base there. Do the math. Travis Walton is another one that he mentions. Now, this is a really famous one. This was in the 70s. And it happened in Arizona. And supposedly this guy, heard like a high-pitched buzz or felt a high-pitched buzz, right? So we see that in Carl's story. He says, you know, he heard this buzzing and it was all through his body. And he said that he was being observed by these three creatures or a bunch of creatures, and that it was actually a human that led him out of this spaceship or this room or wherever he was. And he woke up on a highway 5 days later walking, and he saw the flying saucer flying off. And that was his claim. And many people have said that that's a hoax, but this guy has made lots of money. Like, he, I don't know. Is he still alive, Phil? I'm not even, he used to be at all the conventions all the time, the UFO conventions.
Yeah. I don't know
if he's still alive anymore. Isn't that sad? And then the last one he talks about is Tom and Elise Gifford. And this is the most intense one. They claimed that they were camping in the desert. Again, so we see another similarity to Carl's story. They were camping in the desert, and that the aliens showed up and held them captive. And this would have been the late 80s, because I was in high school. I actually remember this. And they said, oh, they watched us in the camper, and they, like, tortured us psychologically, and they were talking to us telepathically and controlling our minds, and they made us relive all of our worst memories and horrible and blah, blah, blah. And they said that the reason they survived was because they prayed all night. So this is the case that you will consistently hear, or at least – in the early 90s, when I was still kind of sort of going to church, the born again Christians will refer to this case a lot as proof that the aliens are, you know, evil and God is good. And that's, I'm not making a comment or poking fun of it in any way. I'm just saying this is a fact. This is what some of the born again Christian churches were sharing in the early 1990s, and I know because I was there.
I think Kevin Letts has mentioned this one to me.
It's a big one in the churches. I mean, they might still talk about it. I don't know. It was almost 30 years ago, but they probably still talk about it.
What about the Trent Farm? Did you talk about the Trent Farm? I think they talked about the Trent Farm too, right?
That was the one that I didn't know. I didn't get a chance to refresh my memory on that one. And actually, I don't even know if I'm familiar with that.
Anything else to say about the movie?
That was the one he actually – yeah, that was the actual one that he went to the farm, I think.
In the movie, Eric. He went to the guy's farm here.
Yeah, where the alien pictures were taken. That was the real location too, and it was the Trent Farm in Sheridan, Oregon. And I think that was why the two alien conventions he went to, one was in New Mexico and then one was in Oregon, because he – they did the stopover at the farm.
Well, I think one was in Roswell. I think that was that big one in Roswell.
That was the New Mexico one. That's right. Exactly. Yeah. And then the second one was in Oregon, because when they had the writing on the screen to tell you where they went, it said alien conventions, Roswell, New Mexico, and something Oregon. Yeah.
So to get back to Eric's question, is there anything more to discuss about the movie? I did want to mention one thing. I really wondered how much of this was actually scripted, or if they just gave people general outlines. Because as a former actress, and this is what I wanted to bring up about the acting and why I felt the acting was really good, I can tell you that this kind of comfort with lines comes a lot better if you're just making it up as you go. Like when Carl tells the story of how he meets the Sky Man, there's a lot of you knows and ums and natural shifts. And you know, those tics are really organic, and they're really hard to pull off if you stick them in a script. You know what I mean? So I wonder if they just said, just talk generally about this and make it up.
I do think there are some moments where I can definitely see how it was all planned. Certain shots and certain things they highlight when they were filming felt more intentional. Though I felt maybe certain moments when the characters are actually just talking to each other, I felt they were a little bit improvised here and there. Maybe it's a little mix of everything.
Well, and that's that may be the. I mean, I think you're right. I think it's a mix of everything because as we all agreed, if we didn't know that this was a faux documentary, you could believe that this was a real documentary about these people, because the acting between the characters is so real, and a lot of it is related specifically to the fact that the dialogue feels real, as well as the way they give the dialogue. So I'm curious if this was practiced script or a mix or something. What's those comedy things where
improv?
Improv, yeah. So it could have been improv. I mean, I don't know if these actors actually came from like an improv, because it was good. It was real.
Well, I'm willing to bet that it's probably more half and half, like you guys suggested, because like I said, some of it was so organic and real. And like I said, as like a former actress, you know, it's really hard to follow a script and get every and, you know, and, you know, all those little ticks of people really talking and repeating things, you know, like you do, like I'm doing right now. If you tried to write the way I was talking as a script right now, oh my God, somebody would have a real fucking hell of a time trying to learn every single tick and get it down right. So I'm wondering if it was half and half. Because I don't know. I mean, yeah, if you were an awesome actor, maybe you could pull it off. But it just seemed like it was just off the cuff and very – just like, here, why don't you tell – here, actor playing Carl, we just need you to basically use these five words. You know what I mean? Or these six words. Here's 10 words you need to use when you tell your story. Go. Make it
right. Right.
And you just say, this is what we want you to say without giving them a verbatim. Right. So yeah, you're going to tell. So yeah, they have all the background worked out, who these characters are, what their relationship is. You know, we're going to have you, we're going to have Carl and Marcus, we're going to have them talk about, their favorite alien movies, you know. So they mention, and so they kind of improv Close Encounters of the Third Kind, right? And you can see that as a scene that may have been improv. It's stuff like that. So the actor who plays Carl probably was given all the information he needed to know about what the abduction was and what his family background was, and then was just said, okay, so now we need you to talk about this particular part of the story, right? And so he would do it using his own words. So
right. And
background,
and I like what Chris said too, which is adds ticks, and the ticks would be, you know, use the word hip every so often, or you know whatever, and. So he ad-libbed, and he told the story that he had an outline for, as you mentioned, Mike. And then he was told by Merrick, to use certain ticks and things and whatever when you tell the story. And that's what makes it come out to be sound very realistic. And then the sister or the friend would play off, like if he forgets a word, like I did with improv, one of them would interrupt and say, the word's improv you're looking for, and they go, oh, right, and then he would continue the story, and so it comes out almost as if, you know, you're watching real people talking rather than an acting performance.
Right, and that way each person speaks. You know, one criticism of certain writers is that when all their dialogue sounds the same no matter who's speaking it, when reality is a lot of us have our own vocabulary usage, words that we like to use, our own style of speaking, and if the actors are improvising their specific lines, then you can get that naturalistic effect that way, because they will use the words they're used to leaning on. You know, do they say big or huge or large, you know, which do they lean on?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And since this is an unknown actor, you know, we're, it's not like when we see Robert De Niro in the in his next film, he has the same tics in every freaking film. Here, it's all fresh because we don't even know who this guy is. We've never seen him before, and if he does have these tics in real life, and he was picked for the film because of it, it doesn't matter because again, he's new to us. He's fresh to us, you know.
So I have a question just about the ending. Are we sure he was abducted?
Yeah, let's talk about the ending.
Sure seems like it to me.
Yeah,
I mean, it looked pretty clear-cut from what I saw.
Yeah.
So he couldn't have just wandered off into the desert?
Got lost?
Well,
I didn't think so. That looked pretty clear-cut to me, but...
The light made me think that something actually happened.
Yeah, well, there's also a shot at the end where he's seen flying up in the air.
Yeah, flying up in the air, exactly. Yeah, and he's not Michael Jordan. So he can't jump that high, right? Why, Mike? What was your feelings?
No, I actually didn't remember the ending that well. I'm kind of trying to remember if there was something specific.
Nope, it was really anticlimactic.
Well, I think the thing that makes it...
Right, and this goes to what I was saying before, is that he starts the film saying he's going to be abducted on his 40th birthday, and he ends up being abducted on his 40th birthday in the least exciting way possible.
Right. Yeah, because we don't see the aliens or the beam. But yeah, what we do see lights flashes, and he says, stay away, and then we see the digital camera later, where it shows... with the night vision camera, night vision on, flying up in the sky and then falling back to the ground without him, meaning he was abducted. But you're right. I mean, it was obviously anticlimactic in the sense that it wasn't like we see the Greys or anything like that or the expressions of his family. We just know that they're still looking for him. I don't know. What was it? All right? Mike felt it was anticlimactic as did Eric, and obviously I kind of did too in the sense that, you know, I wanted to see more. Though it does give us the people who like the character some positive ending in the sense that okay, he was right and he wasn't lying, he wasn't insane. But
give me up, Scotty.
What about you, Abe? Yeah, hey, what did you think about him being abducted and him actually being right?
Well, I think my thoughts go back to what you were Mike was saying, how the ending could have also been him not finding out and that being just as much of a fulfilling ending. I mean, it's glad that he was right. It was good. I was happy he was right, mainly because I felt bad for the guy after everything he's been through. On the other hand, it would have been interesting to see how he would have dealt with that if nothing had occurred. I just feel, you know, both were somewhat satisfying in terms of the character arc, not so much as a finale in terms of anything exciting happening. So, it's like, okay, great, good for character arc, but you're not good to really in terms of a viewing experience.
Right. What about you, Chrissy? Your thoughts of the ending.
I would have to agree with Mike that I was really surprised that he got abducted at the end. I was really truly expecting him to either wander off into the desert or for him to, you know, just do something terrible to himself because it didn't happen. Which I don't think I would have been happy with because I really liked this character. I liked this character.
That would have made me so happy.
I felt bad for him. And in a way, I sort of was glad to see him get his happy ending. I was sort of glad to see it. I mean, was it the best ending in the world? No. Like I said, I agree. It was telegraphed. We were delivered exactly what we ordered, basically, or what we were told that we had ordered. But, you know, I was, I mean, I don't know. I was happy to see him have his happy ending, but that's just more proof to me that this is not a horror movie or a sci-fi movie. This is really about the journey to fulfill our dreams and the journey to become the person or the people we were always meant to be. That's another theme that's going on through this. Because, you know, you do have the sister who's trying to become a nurse and fulfill her dreams. You have, you know, the father, even though he is not present, okay, because he passed away, he was working on fulfilling his dream of having the ultimate prep home, you know, for his family. So there are all of these characters in here are working to achieve something, or most of them are. And so it was nice to see that he got to achieve his too. But that's my thoughts on it. I didn't hate it. I mean, I don't know. I sat there kind of when it was over and went, oh, I don't know if they could have ended that any other way. I would have been unhappy unless you wanted to go, like I said, super dark. Like he finds out it's not real. So he gets a gun and blows his head off. I mean, which I just said that would have made him very happy.
Or it could have been more cool too, right? Where we could have saw the aliens for a second in the camera and then, you know, that's true.
That's true. That could have ended like that too. Yeah, and that would have been fine. Right. I mean, I'm a little. See, I was not as disappointed as you guys that we didn't actually see quote the Greys, because a lot of times when we see them, they're sort of cheesy. The fourth kind, you didn't really see them. You saw a face or two. The one that did it best, honestly, for me was Close Encounters. And after that, all these other things sort of look cheesy. I don't care what they do. They all look cheesy compared to Close Encounters.
Well, I think you need, you know, most stories you're going to have, have a twist, have a turn. You know, it doesn't have to be like the, you know, M. Night Shyamalan kind of twist. But something happens that's not necessarily expected or that should take the audience by surprise. And, you know, it's one thing when you say the story is telegraphed, like when we... You know, if we review a horror movie and you know from the beginning who is going to be the final girl. You know, that's telegraphed. This was spelled out, you know, down to him saying, here's the letter I want you to read if I die or if I don't come back, rather. And of course, you know, at the end, you know, they get the thing that he told them that's there. You know, you start by saying, I'm going to be abducted again by aliens, and he's abducted again by aliens. There are a lot of ways that maybe they could have done it differently. I'm not sure. That may have changed the ending. There's things that you could have done that would have made it more dramatically cheesy, you know, make it less of a good thing. You certainly could have had what if the aliens didn't show up? What if the aliens showed up and took somebody else? But that really would have changed the character story.
Yeah, right.
And I'm not really sure, you know, again, if what he wants is a happy ending for this character, I don't know whether any other way they could have gone, but then that tells me the problem isn't necessarily with the ending as it is with everything that leads up to the ending. Maybe they shouldn't have spelled that out quite so clearly for us.
Or, as Eric mentioned, show us the monsters at the end, even if...
Yeah, but the monsters, that's... The showing the monsters is a thing for the audience and not necessarily a thing for the character.
Right. But, well, let's say, as Chrissy said, the ending was fine for the character. The question is, now, how do you make the ending fine for the audience? And that would be, show us the monsters, as Eric would say. Don't you think?
Yeah, but we've seen Greys before. I mean...
But we want to see it in this movie, right?
Oh, can we please just end this episode?
Poor Eric is suffering so...
Anyway, all right. Let's do that, Eric. We pretty much talked about a lot. Let me just ask Chrissy once more. Is there any other items in the film that you wanted to bring up?
No, I think I'm good. I think I talked about pretty much. We all kind of talked about anything I wanted to mention.
Yeah.
You know, but Phil, I do have 4 more hours of UFO related incidents I was going to read just for Eric's benefit.
This episode is going to end with me committing suicide.
Oh. Please turn on the webcam. We need the ratings.
I'm so hosing. All right. So anyway.
Yeah, all right. I'm done. All right. Fair enough. All right. So we'll give our final thoughts on the film. But before we do that, a couple of things. what we've been watching or news. I actually saw a couple films. I actually saw the trailer for Camp Coldbrook, which is a film that Eric has mentioned a number of times as a pretty decent film. And the reason
I mentioned it once. You've asked me about it again about half a dozen times.
Fair enough. And right, because I always confuse the title. It's Camp Coldbrook, and I always get it mixed up with Cold Blood or something. So I continuously have to ask you what it is. But I did write it down here. And when me and my wife watch films, she has to read the blurb. And if the blurb is okay, she then has to see the trailer. And even though the trailer we saw, she's decided to pass. But I thought the trailer was pretty damn good. And everything that Eric had mentioned to me earlier was making me think it was going to be like a teen slasher, but it appears it's not at all. So I'm definitely going to check this out now, Eric, even though I'm not a trailer person. But I did see some films. I saw a film, Dead Sound, which is really good. I guess actually the filmmakers were interviewed by Leo Pond on the Dorkening, which was not surprising because it takes place in New London, Connecticut, the film. And it's really good. The first 20, 30 minutes makes you think it's going to be a teen slasher, but it's much more. There's a big thing that happens that makes it a really tense thriller horror film. I would highly recommend it and even would recommend it as a potential episode for the podcast. And I did see this film here, and I did see The Rental, but we'll be talking about that later. And another thing. Oh, I saw I See You, which is the film with Helen Hunt, came out, I guess, late December, and then on disc in January or February. It's a horror thriller, and that was a really good film. I would highly recommend that one as well. And then I saw the new Kevin Bacon, Amanda Seyfried film, the same director that did The Stir of Echoes. The film is called You Should Have Left, and it was one of those, you know, $25 rentals because it was originally supposed to be at theaters and stuff, but now you can get it down to like
sister said that was really good.
It's really good.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch that this weekend because I'm actually gonna go out to my friend Heather's, and we always like to watch a horror movie, so I'm saving that to watch it with her. So I'm going to do that this weekend.
For all those who are concerned, Chrissy will be 6 feet apart and wearing a mask.
Yes, I will. Please, no worries.
But yeah, it's a really good film. And now that it's down to the regular rental prices, like The Invisible Man and all those other films that used to be like 20-something bucks. So I would highly recommend people check that one out too. And my wife liked that film as well as I See You and as well as Dead Sound. So all three of those films my wife gave the pass on during our movie nights, and all of them were damn good. What about you, Eric? Have you seen anything that you wanted to bring up?
Well, I have been plowing through a shit ton of rewatches. So real quick, just since we last recorded, I have revisited The Invisible Man, The Terminator, T2, Melancholia, Django Unchained, and The Dead Zone. So those are all good movies. I watched a documentary
I would say they're all great movies, Eric.
I like them all a lot, which is why I watched them again. I watched a documentary called In Search of Darkness, which is about 80s horror movies. It's about 4 hours. It is available on Shudder. I liked it, but you know, it's like,
ooh, that sounds awesome. Thank you.
For folks,
Eric,
like us, there's not a whole lot of new material there. A lot of people who listen to this show probably know a lot of the trivia and such that's put forth. But it was still like a comfort thing. I had it on while I was working.
That's what I look for, Eric. Stuff I can listen to when I'm working. So that's perfect. Awesome. Thanks.
Another Shudder watch was The Beach House, which I enjoyed. It's an odd movie.
Oh, it's good. Yeah.
I kind of described it as a weird hybrid between The Bay and Color Out of Space.
Yeah.
I liked it. And then I watched a limited series on Netflix called Reckoning. which was interesting. It's a I guess I'd call it a dark drama. The basic setup is that the two main characters that you're following are a detective that's obsessed with a serial killer case, and then that actual serial killer, who, in addition to being a serial killer, is also a father and a husband.
What station is this on?
It's on Netflix. And I thought it was really well done. And hang on, I'm looking up the name of the actor. Sam Trammell is the name of the actor that played the actual killer. And I thought he did just a pretty amazing job of playing somebody who's got these dark urges and doesn't want to have them but can't help it. So I would recommend that. It's a 10-episode series on Netflix.
For people who are familiar, want to know who Sam Trammell is, he's the actor that played the owner of the bar that Suki worked at in True Blood. So he was like one of the stars in True Blood for years.
Oh, I never watched that show. So.
Yeah, he's pretty good. Yeah,
I thought he was excellent in this.
He's a good actor. He's a good actor.
And then
Eric? He was actually the boyfriend that Helen Hunt was cheating with in I See You.
Okay.
Same actor. Yeah. So, he was in that
so then I watched. It's actually a sequel that I hadn't heard anything about, didn't know was around until I just saw it available. And that's Blackwater Abyss. And it's directed by the same guy who wrote Blackwater, Australian crocodile attack movie. This one is also a crocodile attack movie, but this time they're in a cave.
It's Alan Trautke again, right? He did Blackwater and The Reef.
I'm not familiar with that name, but I'm not going to argue with you. I trust that you know what you're talking about there. It is what it is. If you want to see a movie with people in a cave getting attacked by a crocodile, that's what it is. So check it out if that sounds good to you.
Was it better than Crawl?
It depends on what your definition of better is. Was it more dramatic? Yeah. Was it more realistic? Probably a little bit. was it more entertaining? I don't think so.
Okay.
So it's depending on what people are looking for in a crocodile film.
Yes, exactly.
Was that a VOD rental, or is that?
Yeah, I watched it on Apple TV.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
And that's
anything else? All right. I would concur. I forgot about The Beach House. Yeah, I saw that too, and it was really good. I love that. And I'm also playing Doom Eternal, about 25% through, and it's really good. It's a great game. So if you love horror and action, it's a great game. All right, what about you, Chrissy? Anything that you wanted to mention?
Yes, I highly recommend The Beach House, and Eric nailed it when he said a cross between Color Out of Space and The Bay. And I loved it. In fact, I watched it like three times. I also watched La Llorona on Shudder. Not the one that came out a few years ago in the movies. This is a Shudder original. It is in
Spanish.
Oh,
is that a different movie?
It is a completely different movie.
The Conjuring universe is The Curse of La Llorona, and it is a perfectly mediocre film and forgettable film. Something different.
This film,
it's a different film, really. Wow.
Yes, and this film is in Spanish with English subtitles. I really liked it.
Interesting. I just saw the title and kept scrolling.
Yeah, no, it's, you know what, give it a try. It's a very serious movie. It's more on the edge of like dark drama kind of thing. It really goes into, I don't want to give it away. Just, it's interesting. I would say definitely give it a try. And if you cannot get into it within, if you're not sucked in within 15, 20 minutes, then just walk away. You're not, you know, because it maintains a steady pace. But I found it really good. It was really up my alley. And if you're not a fan of shit with subtitles, then definitely stay away from this one because it's all in Spanish. But I just really liked it. I loved the atmosphere. I loved how dark it was. I loved that it was very subtle. I know it was good. I liked it. And that's all it. Right. That's all I had the chance to do this week because I've just been so busy with another short story I just finished. So
all right. What about you, Abe?
Aside from my own writing, I haven't had chance to really watch a whole lot. So most of it is the same on my end. So that's it for now.
All right. Mike, what about you? I know you were working on Far Cry 5. How was that going?
Yeah, I finished Far Cry 5. I'm near the end of Far Cry New Dawn. I'm looking That's forward to getting away from video games for a bit.
How's your new TV?
It's still big. The cat still really likes it.
why do you want to get rid of get away from video games, by the way?
Because I tend to play the games and not watch a lot.
Right, right.
So it's a matter of one or the other, and I kind of would like to get around to watching some things. I have watched, I finished watching the second season of The Alienist, which is highly recommended. It has a couple of moments of inserting 20th century politics, 20th and 21st century politics in it. So they have to have that moment where the characters are more self-aware than characters of the late 1900s probably would be, late 19th century. But other than a couple of those moments, I think it's a very good series and I would highly recommend it. I probably like the second season more than the first. Finished watching the second season of Doom Patrol, which if you're interested in a completely different and offbeat kind of comic book story, I would recommend it. Timothy Dalton has a much bigger role the second season than he did in the first. But yeah, it's just hard to describe. It's hard and capture it in words. And Umbrella Academy, I'm midway through this second season of that on Netflix right now. And that's about
I tried that. I couldn't get into it.
What was it, Eric?
The Umbrella Academy.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, I know. I've seen a lot of people trying to compare that Doom Patrol and Umbrella, and which do you like better? And I haven't seen either, so I'm not quite sure.
It's really hard for me to compare because Doom Patrol is largely based on the Grant Morrison run of the comic book from about 30 years ago. And it's one of my favorite runs on a comic book series that's ever been done. It is very, very weird and imaginative, and Umbrella, and so, but it's also something that I have a strong connection to, where Umbrella Academy is completely new. I think Umbrella Academy is slicker, and more polished, and Doom Patrol may have some rough edges to it, but it's also just more bizarre. You know, and in the first season, you know, anytime you have a superhero team story, you have to have that moment where the team comes together. Well, they have that team coming together moment in a way that I promise you have never seen before in the most literal way possible. So, it's just weird and strange. And it's kind of like, you know, The Boys is another very adult oriented comic book film told through a different lens, but that one's aimed more at, being satirical, you know, where these two aren't, they're a little bit more deconstructivist.
Gotcha. All right. Anything else, Mike?
That's all I can think of off the top of my head.
All right, sounds good. All right, so, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called The Askancy Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. You can find it wherever you got this one.
Excellent. And, Mike, you, me, and Eric do another podcast?
We are we? I wasn't sure how we stood on that, which is Cinema a la Carte.
Yep.
And we have another episode of that coming out in a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We also have another new podcast, which is Travel Guide to Lovecraft Country, based on the new HBO TV series.
I actually will not be partaking in that one.
Right, because Eric doesn't like being kept in suspense.
Indeed. So it'll be me, Mike, Kevin Letts, and Barrett Heisner. So we're doing that episode weekly, similar to the Game of Thrones or the Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, or American Gods.
And we're really hoping the first episode isn't fucking horrible, because we've committed to doing this and we've not seen a minute of footage yet. So,
right. Which was what happened with American Gods.
Well, American Gods. I kind of had an idea what was going into it. I guess you didn't, but
yeah, I did not.
And I was willing to go in based on the pedigree of the show creator, who then left, and the second season turned into a complete clusterfuck.
For what it's worth, Dave Chen over on the Slash Filmcast had a screener for the first episode of Lovecraft Country and said it was pretty good.
That's good. Yeah, his taste is pretty decent.
Well, I'm also careful because it is a story with a message. And I'll say this no matter what it is. Anytime you have a story, a film or a TV show with a message, some people like to review the message more than they like to review the story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I want to be, and I'm not saying he's wrong, and I'm not saying it's wrong for you to enjoy a film or TV show for that reason. But for me, the message has to be second behind the competence of the storytelling.
It's truly Lovecraftian. The message might be white people rule.
Yeah,
yeah, that is true. That could well be.
Well, no, not white people. Wasps rule, because he didn't like the Polish, the Italians, or the Portuguese, among others. Either.
Yeah, yeah. Modern politics doesn't seem to get that distinction. The idea that that 100 years ago or 120 years ago, the idea that my Irish and Italian ancestors, or that Eastern European Jews would be considered white people, would probably have shocked any one of them.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
The definition of white has expanded considerably.
Yes, because I'm like half Portuguese, and they were right there with the Irish and the Eastern Europeans and the Italians. The French Canadians, which is my father's side, were always considered those Catholic weirdos that lived among the WAFs, you know. So it was kind of interesting. What do you say, Chrissy?
Lovecraft married a Jewish woman.
Yeah, no, she did. Yeah, I mean, he was like the type that would talk about it, but I don't know how much he really practiced hating the people.
Well, it's my Uncle Tommy was kind of racist. The last time I visited him when I was about 12 or 13, I can't tell you the number of N-bombs that were dropped in his house, but his best friend was black. You know, people are complicated. They're not cartoon characters. So
they should be. That would be more entertaining.
It would be more entertaining, and it would just be a hell of a lot easier for the rest of us.
Plus,
so,
we could just like hit people in the face with frying pans without any consequences. That would be awesome.
Oh, would be paradise.
But either way, Travel Guide to Lovecraft Country is joining the network, and that is going to go live. I haven't released it yet because I'm going to go probably live with the new website this weekend and start
Does that show already started airing?
No, but we did like an intro episode.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we recorded that this week after you said you were out. It was like, all right, we'll go without you. So we'll have that released as well as episode one with the new RSS feed and the new website at the same time. And hopefully that'll be done this weekend. All right, sounds good. Chris, you have some stuff going on?
Oh, I always have too much going on. I've been working on a lot of short stories. I am a short story writer. You can find out more about me at www.christypetersonschoonover.com or find me on Facebook, because my blog has really taken a backseat right now, so it's probably kind of outdated. But I promise I'm going to update it soon. Oh, my God. I hope.
And they can always find you at the Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, too.
Yes, you can always find me in there. Yep.
All right, and Abe, we're going to be doing, speaking of Lovecraft, we're going to be doing Lovecraft's book. People are still working on reading it, and Chrissy actually may join us. And that we're hoping to do late August, but even possibly September due to time constraints and with the new website coming up. It's holding us back a little bit. What is it?
We guess it was a double feature of Shadow Innsmouth and Dagon. It's been pushed back several times, but hopefully this month we'll finally get the chance to sit down and talk about it. We've been covering some of Lovecraft's other stories. Prior to that, we looked at two of King's works as well. So those are up right now. So stay tuned. We'll be doing this recording shortly, once everyone's got this stories read and finished, and it should be a fun discussion.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so I guess we can get into our final thoughts of this movie. So let's start with you, Eric.
Yeah, I've already made it clear I didn't care for this movie, so I won't belabor the point. I'll just say it wasn't for me, and move on.
All right, very good, Chrissy.
I really liked this movie. I think it's more of a character study. It's definitely not for everyone, but I thought it was very genuine. And as far as fake documentaries go and found footage, I really, really liked this one. This is going to be high up on my found footage documentary list of favorites. But then again, that's just me.
All right, very good. I like this film a real lot. It wasn't what I was expecting. I was hoping more of an alien abduction, that movie. That's actually the name of the movie. Found footage horror film, science fiction film from a few years ago that was really scary, awesome, gray film. This film is not that. However, it is an interesting, well-made, fantastically made film for the type of film it is. Great character study. It has a lot to say about the human psyche of someone that has had something drastic happen to them, or what they think happened to them as a child. There's more into it as well as we discussed through the film, through the podcast. But as a great film, it's still pretty good because you know the whole story is about grays and about someone that thinks they were abducted by a gray and is searching for it or thinks they're coming back for him. So I would recommend it for anybody who likes that type of film, the gray type of film, found footage type of film. Just beware, it's more of a drama than true science fiction or true horror or true thriller, as some people may think if they're going into it.
So I'm mixed on this film. I thought it was well performed, and I think it had some good themes to explore. I did sympathize and think the character of Carl Merriweather was well done. On the other hand, I wish there was a little more going on. It's a real slow burn, and it's not really a film I personally would revisit. But for others, if you're looking for more character a character study, a more emotional journey in a film, this might be more of your alley. But if you're looking for more supernatural, science fiction, aliens in general, you might want to look elsewhere. But it's really going to all come down to the end of what you're actually looking for in a movie. If you know what you're looking for, and this film, you know, checks those boxes, then you're going to have a good time. Otherwise, not so much.
All right, very good. Mike?
Yeah, I am not a fan of, and actually I don't really get the idea of doing a fake documentary of a thing that you could have actually done a real documentary about. I'm probably not the audience for this. If I had known this is what it was, I doubt I would have wanted to watch it and agreed to do it. But I think for what it was trying to do, I think it did it fairly well. As has been said, I think the writing was fairly solid. The character development was very good. The actors were very good. So again, it's as I think we've all said, it depends on what you're looking for. And, I will give it therefore a lukewarm recommendation with lots of caveats.
All right. Very good. So this is a 2020 faux documentary found footage, kind of, sort of, thriller, super sci-fi film, directed by Daniel Myrick and written by him as well, the same director or co-directors of the original Blair Witch Project, among a number of other interesting and some pretty damn good indie horror films, including The Believers, which I would highly recommend from a decade ago. Stars basically three folk, as we discussed, and those folks were Michael Selle as Kyle Merriweather in basically his first performance. Also, Nicolette Sweeney played the sister, and then Faliolo Ale e Lima played Marcus, the friend. Again, that's a Somalian name, and not Somalian, I'm sorry, a Samoan name, so it's a tough one, tough one. I hope I did not butcher it, even though Eric got a kick out of it. So right now it's available anywhere VOD is. Brand new film, came out 2 weeks ago, if not less than that. It was $3.99, I think, to rent, and $7.99 to buy. I just purchased it, and I actually watched it twice, because the first time I watched it, I was pretty sick. And then I rewatched it these past couple nights to actually really get to pay attention, where I'm a little more healthy, even though I did have about 10 coughing fits that I muted. So with that stated, I guess we can lead it out. So, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right, thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about Skyman. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.